Hello, welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. If you are like most, you are here because you want to gain insights on how to best scale a business. To achieve optimum scaling, many metrics are important. Sales, leads, cost of customer acquisition, gross revenues. However, as you know, no statistic is as important as profits, both net and gross. For over a decade, your host, Richard Doherty, has helped his clients increase their profits, often turning them into profit-rich winners. To help listeners like you achieve stellar profits in business, Richard has written an ebook entitled Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It includes profit-making advice from Richard, as well as some of the top guests he's had on the podcast. Just for listening, it is yours free. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hello, I'm Richard, a change and transformation consultant and self-confessed fintech enthusiast. And today, we continue our series looking at the evolution of fintech in 2023.
I'm super excited today to have on the show Karine. Karine is the commercial sales director over at Provenir. In today's show, what we're going to be doing is diving into the world of BNPL. We all know in 2022 was a bit sort of love and war, maybe, is the phrase I'd use. And it's great to get some really deep industry insights as to exactly what happened in 2022 and also what's going to be the key themes coming into 2023. So, Karine, super excited to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
And just before we jump into the session, you know, maybe you can give the listeners out there a bit of detail, a bit of information about you and your role at Provenir, and also what the Provenir team are up to.
Yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity. So as you say, I'm the European Commercial Director at Provenir. Provenir is all about the automation and optimization of business decisions. So we bring benefits to our clients, like enabling them to process 60 loans, where before they could only do one. Getting credit decisions greater than 30 seconds down to under a second. And that including, you know, all the processes you need to go through, like KYC, fraud checks, credit risk checks, increasing conversion rates by up to 10%. And all of this in a platform that we can put live 3 to 4 months after signature. Our record that we're very proud of is 38 days with a very, very switched on client, but it can be done.
I like that you said a switched on client.
Yeah. That's very good. Exactly. Yeah. And sort of plugged into this, we have a library of pre-built data interfaces, because obviously having good decisions, you need good data and comprehensive data. And we understand that and we help clients get that together. And also the platform has included in it sort of explainable auto ML that self-generates, obviously with the human view. It doesn't just put itself in live and, you know, you have to live with the results to make sure that you get the best decision possible. And, you know, this is a massive win to, you know, our sizable buy now, pay later portfolio of users who include people like Gojek, Klarna, Zilch. So some quite big names growing and using our platform.
Nice. And brilliant. So let's dive into today's session. And maybe we can start at the top. You mentioned buy now, pay later there at the end of your synopsis. You know, it's been a bit of a, you know, 2022 was a bit of a rough and tumble year. You know, lots has been said in the papers about valuations in the fintech space for buy now, pay later businesses. But, you know, if we were to take a look at some of the key challenges that BNPLs are facing right now, what do you think are the top three key themes or key challenges that fintechs really need to overcome in this space?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure what I will say is what everybody says, because, you know, there's some big themes out there at the moment. And, you know, I think the economic situation being as it is, you know, is a big theme. You know, this impacts us as consumers in that, you know, cost of living is going up, value of household income is going down. So, you know, we're all looking for cleverer ways to make the money that we have go further. So that's, you know, a big challenge at the moment. From the flip side of that, from the business side of that, you know, it's also impacting their ability to get funding. So, you know, what we're seeing is, you know, businesses that are taking deposits are in slightly better shape. They actually have some revenue, some money to run their businesses off. Whereas if you're out searching for external sources of revenue, that's getting scarcer and scarcer. So that makes it harder to run your business. And, you know, all of this is impacting profitability. So, you know, exactly as you rightly said, you know, share prices are going down and, you know, by quite significant amounts in some cases. I think on the flip side of that, you know, we're seeing demand for buy now, pay later go up. As we said, you know, people are looking for clever ways of making money go further. Mm. And, you know, buy now, pay later is a good way of doing it. You know, if I'm comparing credit cards, you know, there's been some quite good studies done that, you know, income level, education level, and whether I have a credit card has no impact whatsoever of whether I'm more likely to use buy now, pay later or not. So everybody's using it. So it's an appealing source of spreading your money for everybody. I think the third thing that I would bring is more competition. I think there's a lot more players moving into this market. You know, we've seen some big names, Apple being one recently, sort of Block, PayPal. I think we're also seeing people coming in and picking off specialist areas. So one that I quite like particularly is sort of the fly now, pay later. Which is quite a cool concept. You know, companies like Uplift who are getting into this space. You know, we're seeing a few of these in Africa as well. In the States, we're seeing companies like Walnut who are doing, you know, healthcare now, pay later. So, you know, people moving into niche markets and sort of trying to develop the same principles in there. And I think, you know, the other side of that more competition is buy now, pay later companies looking for different revenue sources, especially ones that are maybe, you know, using fee income, which is probably going to become more and more squeezed by regulation. You know, so can you look at, especially if you're a company that has a good application or a platform play, you know, how much income can you make from marketing lead generation and using that as a different way of getting additional money to stay ahead of the competition?
I like it. Pick up on a couple of things there. You mentioned, you know, you've seen an upward spike in BNPL services over the last maybe few months. But also, there's an innate need for companies to find different revenue streams, right? So my question is this. I mean, in both of these instances, are you seeing B2B, BNPL become more of a thing?
Yes.
Or is it B2C?
No. Yeah. So to be honest, the vast majority of our portfolio, buy now, pay later, to date has been B2C. And we have just recently sold our first B2B and we have other B2B conversations in flight in Europe. So it's definitely something that is, you know, I would say in the last, you know, 12 to 9 months has come onto the radar and we're seeing a lot more demand. And I think, you know, that's quite a normal trend in financial services that, you know, the consumer market seems to be the sort of spearhead of the market. Yeah. And then once we as consumers get used to this functionality, you know, because me as a consumer and me, well, you as your own, you know, your sole trader, you know, your head of your co-founder, you know, why can I not have the same product? You know, I'm the same person who have a very similar need, but just in a business context, why can I not get it? So, you know, I think that's a very normal sort of progression that, you know, the consumer is the sort of spearhead of where services are going. And then we as a population say, well, you know, I can get it in this role, but with a different hat on, I can't get it. That's crazy.
I like it. I like it a lot. And, you know, I've been speaking to a few execs over the last, well, I was speaking to a lot of execs over the last few months. And one of the things that seems to be coming up more and more, especially in the fintech space, I'm not talking about banking, talking about fintech, is regulation. And I want to get your take on that. I mean, what role do you see regulators playing in this space? Do you see that evolving? Do you see it becoming more? Yeah. And if it is evolving, what do you see it becoming?
Yeah. This is no longer speculation, is it? I think, you know, if you look at most of the markets, you know, it's a fact of life now. Yeah. So, you know, you can see in, you know, the Australian market, you know, they were quite clever. I think the fintechs in Australia and sort of got together and put together their code of practice before the regulator. And it looks like, you know, the regulator has taken a lot of that code of practice to put into, you know, what will become the legislation that's coming over there, I think the middle of next year. And, you know, in the UK, you know, this is a process that's been going on with consultancy. And I think we're expecting something coming out at the end of this year. So I think, you know, the question about is it going to happen has gone away. And I think, you know, the cleverer markets are getting ahead of the game by showing willing and accepting it's going to happen. So, you know, let's be part of the process and let's be an actor in the process rather than a victim in the process and let it happen to us. But I think, you know, I think it's definitely a good thing. And I think it's a good thing, I think, for the retailers and the merchants and the consumers. Because I think from a consumer perspective, you know, most of the regulation is about trying to make it clearer, trying to reduce the, I would say that the companies that are not mainstream, but are putting quite heavy fees on things if you don't make payments, and protecting consumers. And I think also the fact that, you know, in a lot of markets, part of the regulation is getting the credit, stopping it being a hidden credit and making it a visible credit. And I think that's very important. You know, there's an awful lot of emphasis at the moment about affordability, you know, protecting people from indebtedness and so on. And I think that will only help. And I know, you know, in some markets, buy now, pay later lenders have been proactively volunteering to submit records to credit reference agencies so that that becomes visible and making that a part of their sales pitch that, you know, this is completely open, there's nothing hidden. And I think, you know, there's a lot of stats that show. I know there was a US report that was saying that bad rates in buy now, pay later after 90 days were only twice what they were for a credit card portfolio, but there was three times as much subprime in a buy now, pay later portfolio than in a credit card portfolio. So that to me illustrates that, you know, there are people that are in that subprime category that are actually managing their buy now, pay later borrowing in a very responsible way. And if that experience can be logged on the credit reference agency data, you know, if that helps those people progress up the financial food chain, that's only got to be a good thing. And I think on the flip side of that, for lenders, it's nobody's interest to do bad business. So, you know, if they can see a broader picture of what my borrowing is, including, you know, my buy now, pay later commitments, that's only going to be good for everybody. So, you know, I think, I know there's some questions in the States about how these commitments are recorded because, you know, quite a lot of credit reference agencies, they're looking for long-term credit commitments with a sort of minimal use of the credit. And if buy now, pay later is put in a short-term credit where you maxed out your credit limits, that doesn't help your, you know, your credit rating. So I think there's some discussions about how it's done. But I think, you know, so long as that's taken into account, you know, it should be positive and should protect, you know, the lenders and the consumers going forward.
Yeah, I like it. You know, I think ultimately what we're talking about here is the regulatory response has, you know, ultimately evolved in the fintech space. And it's more mature. Fintech's more mature, and so the regulator's becoming more mature. Yeah. I think it's gone through a phase where the regulators were supporting growth and making certain fintech was adopted. And now we talked through the risks, and now we understand the risks. There's data out there. Now, ultimately, it's up to them to take action and be able to mitigate those risks so that the ecosystem can flourish and grow, right?
Yeah. Totally agree.
Want to increase the profits in your business? Download Richard's ebook right now, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It will help you find new ways to increase your profits. Best of all, it's free. Go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.
As we look forward into 2023, outside of a few things that you mentioned at the top of the show around some of the opportunities in this space, what else do you think are opportunities in the BNPL space that fintechs especially and the leaders out there can really lean into to make 2023 a nice year, a good year? Let's say a good year, not a bumpy and bruised year.
Okay, so I think that there's still a lot of challenges in 2023, which we can talk about. I think on the good side, I think buy now, pay later, you know, like I referenced at the beginning, is an attractive model to everybody. Yeah. But we know it's a particularly attractive model to Generation Z. Yeah. So I would say, you know, buy now, pay later is a trend that has demographics, that has time on its side. Because, you know, that population, and, you know, I'm imagining, you know, the populations following are going to be exactly the same. You know, they're not going to be credit card users. They're going to be wanting to be, you know, the quickest, easiest, the most, you know, phone savvy tech type users. So I think, you know, on the positive side, buy now, pay later definitely has time on its side, because the population that are attracted to it is only going to get bigger with time. Yeah. So I think that's a big positive for them. I think the model is massively evolving. And, you know, you have to say, you know, all respect to the people that were in this game from the beginning, because I think they were the people that, you know, really opened up the market and had the biggest challenge. I think people coming in now are maybe working off different bases. So I sort of see it as, you know, buy now, pay later 1.0, 2.0. And I think we're moving into 3.0 now. So I would say, you know, 1.0 were those early adopters who were really going for point of sale, very little data, instant decisions on people they had no relationship with whatsoever. So, you know, from, you know, a credit risk decision point of view, one of the hardest decisions you're ever going to have to make. Yeah. You know, the only flip side of that is the amounts are quite small and the outcome period is quite short. Yeah. But even so, you know, it's your credit manager's worst nightmare. Yeah. You know, but, and then when we got into sort of buy now, pay later 2.0, I think people were, you know, the players that had made it had a good customer database and were working off the value of their customer portfolio and the marginal risk or marginal cost of one additional customer coming on was suddenly reduced. So long as they could keep the portfolio in a good place, they could accept one or two, you know, a percentage of bads coming in, because overall they could manage the risk at portfolio level. And I think, you know, that's where a lot of the players are now. What I'm seeing now is what I would call buy now, pay later 3.0, which I think is going to the next level, where what companies coming in today are doing is trying to pass the risk onto another credit product. So yes, you can have buy now, pay later with me, but you need to plug your credit card into it. So it's actually the credit card that sits behind that's taking the risk, whereas I'm offering you the nice fancy, you know, buy now, pay later services and the platform and the gateway to the merchants, but I'm not actually, you know, supporting the risk, which, you know, is a really great model and is really, you know, a really great development of where we're seeing. So I think for me, you know, the model is evolving, and I don't think it can finish at 3.0. You know, I think one of the big challenges, I think, of these companies is trying to become profitable. And I think that challenge is made even harder in the current climate. You know, so I think, you know, the customer demand is there. I think the business model will need to develop, because, you know, at a certain point, you have to start, you know, getting some return on the investment, and, you know, even more in a climate that's going to be difficult to work in.
Nice. And kudos on that answer, because that gives us a view into the future, and also takes in the past building blocks. And you know, if we look wider across the fintech ecosystem, I mean, what do you think are some of the biggest challenges facing in the industry? I mean, I've spoken to others, and, you know, some of them are mentioning lack of tenants, industry regs. We've already spoken about security, user experience, adoption. What are your thoughts when we look at the wider ecosystem, wider fintech ecosystem? Where do you see the main challenges are in 2023?
So you just answered your own question. So I would completely concur with that list. You know, I'll go through it in my order, but, you know, you'll see the same points coming back. You know, cybersecurity, 100%, you know, more and more digital, more and more remote. How do you let the good guys in a quick, frictionless, nice, easy way, but keep the bad guys out?
Yeah.
You know, an ongoing challenge. You know, the staff I would link with technology. I think there's already a shortage of people to do the jobs. Mm. And then if you link that with the fact that in this industry, technology is not standing still. So, you know, that problem only becomes worse, because even if you've got somebody today who can do the job, yeah. are they going to be able to progress with the speed that technology is progressing? Yeah. So, you know, it's a, you know, running to keep standing still, I think, type problem on the sort of staff side, yeah. given the speed that the technology is advancing. Yeah. Regulation, yeah, we've definitely talked yeah. about. And, you know, I think regulation will always be a continuing theme, because, yeah. it, you know, like with Buy Now, Pay Later, it's always running to catch up with the way that the market's advancing, you know, trying to keep people safe, trying to look after people, you know, making sure that the environment that we work in has confidence, you know, it enables people to build businesses and build lives.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the final thing that you mentioned, I would totally agree with as well. You know, how do you build loyalty in a remote world? Because we don't have that sort of personal interaction. So it's, you know, the whole new game about how do you build attraction for a product in the first instance? How do you then retain, and how do you do the personalization? And I had a really great example of this, which was quite a few years ago, probably about 10 years ago now, which just shows the, it's a very different, difficult balancing act. And it was actually with one of the major telco suppliers who at the time were using sort of near field recognition on your phone linked to vending machines. And it allowed them, when you approach the vending machine and say, "Hi, Richard, how are you doing? Would you like your black coffee this morning?" And it was a technology that's very personalized. It knows what you want. It recognizes that you're there. But people found it very spooky.
Yeah, it's spooky because I don't drink coffee. I'm like, come on, man, what's going on?
I think it's a really good example of, you know, the technology enables it.
Yeah.
But are we as a population ready for it? And I think this is the sort of difficult balancing act that companies are trying to play with, because, you know, the technology enables us to do a lot of things, but are we ready for it yet? So, you know, it's trying not to get ahead of the curve. So to build loyalty, build personalization, but in a way that doesn't freak people out and feel that they're being followed and watched and, you know, Big Brother really is out there.
Well, I like it. I like it a lot. And because we're speaking about technology, I'm going to ask you something else that just popped into my head. What do you see as some of the leading technologies out there, or maybe the most compelling technologies in the current market as we sort of head into the next evolution of, I think, fintech? What do you think are the maybe the three or five technologies that folks should keep an eye on?
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, something like AI is in its infancy. I think that's going to go a long way. I think at the moment, it's one of those things that's still at the curve, beginning of its curve, in that everybody understands it, everybody gets it, but there's not that many companies that have reaped the value of it yet. And I think there's an awful lot more to do in that. And I think some of the challenges that we were talking about sort of data is growing and growing and growing and becoming, there's more and more and more of it, but that's no good to you unless you can extract the data out of it. And I think that's where the AI part comes in, but it's taking it from a concept from a student who thinks it's cool and actually applying it and operationalizing it to actually give you some business benefit and bringing that back into the business. And, you know, to me, it's all about that sort of, you know, recognizing me as an individual. So it's almost, you know, what used to happen when I had a face-to-face relationship with people, that, you know, for me, that AI should be that's the route to make that happen in an automated way. And, you know, being able to take the intelligence out of the data and then know how you treat me. So, you know, for example, I think in the future, you know, if we take things like mobility, or we take things like accommodation, I think there's a massive amount that we can do in those areas. So at the moment, you know, I have my car sitting outside. It's taxed, it's insured, it's paid, but it sits on the drive for I don't know how many hours a week doing nothing. You know, logically, that's not a sensible solution. So if you can take AI to my mobility problem and say, okay, you know, I need a car now and again to do this. I need maybe a bigger car now and again to do something else, to go camping in the summer. You know, I need a really big car. You know, from time to time, I've maybe like an electric bike. From time to time, you know, if I'm in the town center, a little scooter might be quite cool. And you can bring that together on a platform and give me, you know, for a price, using AI to select multiple solutions for multiple providers that would give me my mobility needs, what I need at the particular time, you know. And I think that that's the sort of problems that AI is really going to revolutionize. You know, today I need a taxi, I need an Uber. That's all I need today. But that all comes as part of the platform. You know, today's the day I go to the supermarket. So, you know, I need an Uber to turn up at the end of the day to take me to the supermarket to bring me back. Yeah. That needs to be built in. So,
yeah, I like it a lot. And as we look and to wrap up the session, what are your top tips? What are your top tips for 2023? Companies to follow or tools to use to help businesses scale up and build up?
If we go back to sort of the buy now, pay later, one of the trends that I think will be really interesting to see how it goes is save now, pay later, which is something that which is just starting up. And, you know, there's quite a lot of research that shows that, I think they say it's about 60% of people at any one time, no matter which income category you're in, are saving for something with the idea that, you know, this isn't a point of checkout solution, and this is maybe something you can use for people who have dropped out of the sales process to say, you know, if we offered you a discount but you would save with us to get it, would you stay in the process? And, you know, with the idea for the benefit that for the merchants is if they can use this to attract people to their site because they're giving price reductions, but they don't have then to pay marketing companies, but the benefit goes directly into my pocket as a consumer. Again, I think that's quite a nice win-win model. So I think that'll be quite interesting to see, you know, how that works. It's sort of the flip side of I want everything now. You know, would I be prepared, you know, if I got a price reduction to save for it in return? I think a lot of people might be open to that. So I think that'll be an interesting business model to see how that goes.
Okay, brilliant. And listen, thanks for coming on the show today. Looking forward to the release of this and obviously your continued expansion over at Provenir. And brilliant to have you.
Thank you very much indeed. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, folks, that's it. So this is Richard over at Scale Up Consulting. If you want to get in touch, drop me a note at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Looking forward to hearing from all of you.
Thank you for listening to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. Please take advantage of the free gift Richard has waiting for you. It's his new ebook, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.